Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and this is the third and final installment of our 7th anniversary special. Sci-Fi Party Line. So since we're kind of having a natural break here, we have one last voicemail I want to get into, and I want to play that one for you. Are you guys, you're ready for it? It's a two-minuter.
All right, let's hit it.
Okay.
Hey, this is Matt, a.k.a. Carpe Carney, with some more comments, this time on episode 235, Daredevil. First of all, just a real quick, really glad that SmackDown WWE has moved to USA instead of Sci-Fi.
Thank you.
Two more hours on Sci-Fi Weekly on the network for programming, and it really does feel like we're getting back to the good days of Farscape and BSG
on
that channel. Getting on to Daredevil, really looking forward to Netflix and Marvel building the Defenders. So, you know, this is a linked series along with Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Daredevil, and they're all going to meet and form the Defenders at some point. So looking forward to that. Season 2 of Daredevil debuts on March 18th, and it looks like Elektra is going to be in it, and judging by the cool poster that was released today, potentially the Punisher as well. Rosario Dawson plays the Night Nurse, is her character's name, and she performs similar functions on, along with all the other characters. So she acts as a nurse for those characters as well, so the character from the comics. The secretary in Daredevil has a very deep backstory, and maybe some of that will come out in future seasons. The buzzsaw guy who built Daredevil's costume is a character named the Gladiator, and those buzzsaws are his weapon of choice. I was hoping to hear what your thoughts were on the writing decision to kill off the reporter in the Daredevil movie. He was played by Joey Pantolone. but it was kind of an odd choice, I thought, to kill off the one of the main characters who was a person of color in the show. Curious to get your all thoughts on that. And then Madame Gao, she didn't say what country she was from, but it's suspected that she's from the mystical Marvel city of Kunlun, which is integral to the origin of Iron Fist, and she may be working with the Iron Fist villain, the Steel Serpent, judging by what was stamped on some of the shipments that she was smuggling. Looking forward to your discussion on Jessica Jones. Really like the party line. Thanks, everyone.
All right. All right.
So awesome. Thank you. I never thought I would hear the actual voice behind Carpe Carne.
I know. Doesn't he listen to MHC as well?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. Lots of feedback. Oh wow.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks
for your feedback. Okay. So sees the beat. Is that what you go?
Sees the meat. Carpe Carne. Sees the meat. Brilliant.
Wow. Ben, that made me so mad because Ben Urich was the linchpin of all the vigilante characters in New York. He was the reporter. He worked with Daredevil. He knew Spider-Man. He knew Luke Cage. Like in the comics, that's what he, you know, he was a beat reporter. He was popular for that. And working with, working on all that kind of stuff. But so when they killed him off, it really threw me because I just swore he would be the one that would link all the other characters together.
Yeah,
because that's how you do it. Like he would cover all these vigilantes that are running around, and it would be so easy to link them. But yeah. I don't know why they chose did.
Go ahead, Eric. A terrible decision, a terribly missed opportunity. I agree 1,000%. And not only could he help link the Defenders shows, but he would also be a very nice link to slip into the cinematic universe eventually as well.
Yes.
What the hell?
I don't know.
Doesn't make any sense.
And I think they're going to make a new character.
Like, Yeah, unless he has like a son, like Ulrich the Second, there's like a younger version.
Well,
like,
they do have a son. I mean, in the comic, he has a son, but they never say that in the show, so I don't know.
I'm just saying, it seemed like such a natural thing to take advantage right. of. It is a little mind blowing.
I mean, if it's about the world and going away from the newspapers, because that's kind of how that, you know, everything was linked by, you know, reporters. He was an investigative reporter. They don't have any of that. They did the same thing with Jessica Jones, where there could have been someone that could have been that reoccurring character to connect her to the police and, you know, like kind of have that connection and help her investigate.
And they killed him too, and it was very confusing.
There you go. Yeah. Doesn't make any sense to me why.
Yeah, I said this when we did Jessica Jones. Like, both of these characters seem like perfect fits and, right. like, really, it's amazing that both of them were taken out in the mm-hmm. first season.
Not that amazing to me.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if only we had seen some more in the history of Rock, where really, really strong, excellent characters that would make perfect sense for some reason get killed off. I'm just not even getting into it. I'm not even going to get into it.
There can be only one.
Yeah. I wanted to jump in before you even got started because, you know, you guys have all of the background, the true comic book background about how the characters fit together and the history of all of that. I mean, I don't. When I was watching Daredevil, I was watching it for the first time. I don't know that universe. And so even without knowing the history of how these people are supposed to be bridging these episodes together, and I just thought he was such an intriguing character, and he was likable, and he was a strong actor. So I was just really upset that he got killed off when he did. And and now that you're telling me this too, I'm even more mad now. This don't make no sense. I'm tired of this.
Because it was like you had a perfect connection where you could have this beat reporter and you can get history out. Like, he could help them investigate where they got their powers from. He could help to kind of link all these corporations together and kind of help them on their journey of doing that. And he's a different type of character where, you know, like, he has that experience that no one else on the show so far has. And that makes him, you know, like, that makes him unique and would add something to the story. I don't know what the thinking goes into that, where you go, because the Night Nurse is, I love Rosario Dawson. I love her. But if all she is just the one to patch him up when they're almost getting killed, that could get really tired. Like, there's not much for her to do besides be the one to patch them up. So to have her be the connection, it just doesn't feel as strong as it would if they had Jurg be the connection. Like, because he could really do something.
Right, because she won't ask the hard questions like him.
That's not her skill set.
Right.
So it's
he's like he's like the newspaper Professor X.
Yeah.
You know what, too? We have a second voicemail from Matt. Y'all want to hear that one?
Yeah, hit it.
Okay.
Hey, this is Matt, a.k.a. Carpe Carne from Twitter. Woo! Wanted to call in and leave some feedback on your recent episode 233 for Childhood's End. Started to make a tweet about it, but it was getting long, so decided to leave a voicemail. Great discussion, but was hoping for a few connections to be made. First, the Doctor Who connection. The miniseries was well adapted by Matthew Graham, who created the original UK version of Life on Mars and its follow-up, Ashes to Ashes. He also wrote a few Doctor Who episodes that weren't as fondly remembered, including Fear Her, the story with crayon drawings coming alive in an Olympic torch, and season 6's overlong Putting People two-parter. The direction of the miniseries by Nick Horan was superb, though. Nick's directed 5 episodes of Doctor Who, including The Girl Who Waited and the 50th anniversary special, The Day of the Doctor. He's just amazing. Angela Dixon from New Zealand did the costumes. She also worked on Hercules and Xena and Lord of the Rings. And was also hoping you guys would discuss how Childhood's End was basically the inspired granddaddy of all sorts of sci-fi, from the 60s The Invaders to the 80s V and Alienation and Independence Day and District 9. There really is a through line there of some great subversive alien visitation stories that were all inspired by childhoods and good stuff. Maybe I'll dial into the party line sometime if you will have me as a guest. I can maybe add and fill in some of this type of info to the fun discussions. Thanks. Bye.
Uh-oh, we have a new member of the Sci-Fi Party Line.
This is how the group expands.
We have a new baby, Carl.
All right.
I love both of these voicemails, by the way. I am not even kidding.
Yeah.
I'm so glad he just brought up all this stuff about childhood, especially because I didn't get to be on that episode. That was an episode, right?
It was, yes.
Yeah, no, but I'm glad he brought it up for a few reasons. Real quick, though, because when I mentioned Colony real quick earlier, I was thinking the Colony, I'm sad to say, I thought it was a better version of what we saw in Childhood's End. I didn't know all those connections behind the scenes of Childhood's End between it and Doctor Who and Xena and everything else.
What?
That's pretty cool. But, and I also don't know what you guys thought who talked about it on SFPL, but
we liked it.
I thought it was okay. But, like, and to address what he brought up about it being, like, the progenitor of this type of sci-fi story, I mean, I wasn't familiar with it before this miniseries came about, but I understood that that was part of the deal of it. And just my personal opinion on it is I feel it suffered the way John Carter suffered, the Disney film John Carter, in that, like, even though it is technically the original coming out now, like you can't unknow what you already know or what you've already experienced with other things.
Yeah.
And I felt it really suffered in that way. And the way people criticized John Carter, but I thought John Carter was better, by the way.
We all like John Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really like that one, but Childhood's End I thought was like, it was okay. And also, I mean, but I want to cut some slack because they had a very large story to tell, and I'm sure they were on some type of shoestring budget. So I should commend them because they probably did, like, amazing, like, you know, considering whatever their budget was for Childhood's End. So I'm sure they did really, really well. And the other unfortunate thing was, well, it was, like, what, 3 2-hour parts?
Mm-hmm.
I would have rather been 6 1-hour parts, but maybe that's just me. And then it came out really quick. So, like, if you missed it, you missed it all really fast. And it came out the same night as, like, The Expanse, which was amazing.
Woo, yeah.
See, but that was bad. That was bad for Childhood's End because, like, Expanse just, like, completely, like, overshadowed it. And, like I said, Childhood's End, it almost seemed like they rushed it out on sci-fi, like, hey, everyone, just blink really quick. Oh, you missed it. Like, you can't even judge it, you know, for whatever it was. It almost seemed like they were trying to slip it by. Like Expanse was running the screen, you know, and it's like, woo, you didn't see Childhood's End, you know. Yeah. There it goes.
I kept referring to Defiance as like this bridge show in the culture of the Sci-Fi Channel, where it was between the old and the new. And I feel Childhood's End was the same way because they were doing the retro thing. They did a very respectful recreation of the book and of the story. I really liked it, but because it's not going to be a series, you know, they didn't kind of like invest the same kind of attention into it as they were going to do for The Expanse. But so it was sort of like they were trying to justify. They were going, look, the Sci-Fi Channel is back. We want to show you the best of what we have. And they really did just cram everything in like this month and a half window of time. You know, it was still on the tail end of some of the new shows that had come out also. So I agree it did not get the attention that it deserved. I also agree I would have liked it to have been a little longer to develop some of the characters. But for what they did, I really enjoyed it. It was dark. It was real. It was they did a good job. And I did not know of all the Doctor Who connections. And that's valuable to know because the production was really top notch. It was really pretty and interesting and intriguing to watch. So they created a solid space for an experience in that. But I didn't know. So that's explaining why it was so good. So, yeah, and of course, Eric, I agree with you that you, We have enough problems, you and me, Eric, anticipating where the stories are going to go. For this to have been the legacy story that all others were based upon, you know, a mile away, you kind of know where things are going. What was interesting about this one, and I don't know if you've seen it or if you read the book, is there is actually sort of a religious edge to it, just right on there. And that's what I think differentiates this from a lot of the other story arcs that we know. So much science fiction is afraid to kind of go in that direction. So for this to be retro, for it to be the progenitor, and to still bring up that relevant kind of religious edge was neat. I thought it was really, really solid. But again, it was so quick. I agree. It was like a flash. And then we were into the new stuff, which is fabulous. But I think it deserved more attention.
Yeah. I agree with that, what you just said. And also I want to say one more thing about this, because you brought up another interesting thing that I've been thinking a lot about what you're talking about, like this transitioning from like the old guard to the new guard or whatever with some of the Stiffy shows, because it's something I've actually been thinking about a lot. Because you remember back to when they did like the Dune miniseries?
Yes.
Children of Dune?
Like, yes. The two of them. And like, okay, going back to that time, I remember it was like very highly praised and touted at the time when that was new. And I feel like at that point, it sort of like set like a template for a lot of sci-fi sci-fi shows and miniseries and other things. Like it kind of established almost like a certain type of look, aesthetic, style of acting, something that has like persisted like for a very long time. And again, I'm not trying to slag childhood then, but again, with it coming out at the same time as The Expanse, it felt very much like the style of the acting and some of the futuristic, quote-unquote futuristic costuming and a little bit of the taste of technology. That stuff rang to me of like, this is like the old way sci-fi used to do a lot of their shows, and a lot of them fall into that. But Expanse was more like, hey, remember when BSG was so innovative and like going in a whole new realistic direction, which is different than Dune and all those other things that are much more stoic and like slow moving.
No, you're 100% right, because during the sci-fi era, they were trying this thing where they were trying to make sci-fi shows without science fiction in it, basically. That's what they were doing. They would set it in space, or set it in a sci-fi scenario, and then you'd watch episode after episode, which was nothing but soap opera. So, you know, that's why you were missing all of the technologies. You were missing that harder edge that was the science fiction. That, you know, that is actually one of my criticisms of Galactica, that was the best attempt of them doing that. And that was my issue with that. So everything that was beneath that was even worse. It was just like space soap operas and just barely any space. It was like Ascension. So but with Childhood's End, that's why I started this by saying it was a bridge show, because yes, you're right, it had that sort of sci-fi without the sci-fi, and it was all about the interpersonal. It was about the change of humanity, not so much about the technology, about the extraterrestrials, not so much about that. But they did it well, and they did it respectful, and it was an interest. They kept it intriguing, and as I use the term maybe too much, it was uncompromising in the way they pulled it off on this on the miniseries. But
And Lannister was cool, by the way. Lannister was cool as El Diablo.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Very very believable. Believe it or not. Yeah. Okay. So, Kat, you wanna
wow, I didn't watch it for a second.
Which show?
Childhood End is no joke. I'm gonna tell you, and that was the thing. Tom and I covered that show in a Party Line episode, and you know we like to have fun on the Party Line. We like to cut up and everything. There's no comedy in Childhood's End. There's no light, and we felt bad after we'd made the cast, because we were like, man, now are you tired after? Yeah, I'm tired, because you cannot bring. There was no hope in Childhood's End. It was just so dark. But, you know, you just had to go there, because this is what some classic science fiction was like. I mean, it was like, you know, 2001, where you don't get all the answers, but the space and the mind expansion is really what made it powerful. childhood is the same way. The kind of questions that they ask are big and they're interesting, mm-hmm. and the journey is what the story is about more than the answer. And that's powerful.
I missed this totally.
Yeah, childhood's I don't know. Y'all say I may not like it, honestly,
I think Kat might not like it.
I don't think you're gonna like it either because one, because of the religious edge of it, you're not a big fan of. And two, it's dark. It's just kind of sad. It's really
true. I mean, the story is basically kind of sad. That sums it up.
Yeah, no, not at all. Oh, well, I didn't expect us to go that deep into childhood
neither did I. Everything got very serious and real for a moment.
That's how it is, man. Even talking about the show, it does that. I can't use it.
Oh, my goodness.
And Tom says hi, everybody. Because, I mean, that's the thing. Tom's like, man, it was like my third show, and then I'm like a downer. It's not you, Tom. It's not you. It was
no, he's still part of the family. We just haven't been recording. That's all, you know. We're still doing it. Yeah. Okay, so what can we bring up after this kind of lighten the mood?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. We've been trying to hold out, Kat, is the really? Real thing. Yes, we've been trying to hold off, and Eric just busted into floodgate. So we're not going to get into it right now, but we will simply give the strong, not the golf clap. We're going to give it the Shia LaBeouf clap of enthusiasm for the new Expanse on Woo! Sci-Fi. Expanse, holy crap!
How are we not gonna get
Don't
into
say
that?
Say Shia LaBeouf, say Megan Fox.
No. You've got. There's a meme where Shia's clapping from Citizen Kane. The Expanse, holy crap!
My God, that is the best thing. Finally. I'm so glad, Eric. You made me watch the newer version of it. As opposed to the older version, because man, that older version was hard to watch. And he was like, no, watch it. And then a guy on Twitter was like, yeah, watch the new thing with all the. I'm so glad
he
you
was
did.
The producer of the show.
Yeah, the producer of the show. That was him?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have time to look things up. But anyway, yeah. I'm glad you both said something to make me watch.
Producer, Kat's you're glad. Rocking it, man.
Yeah,
you're rocking.
Kat's glad the producer of the Expanse, like, convinced her to
Well look
that's if all it takes.
Look, if it had been the producer behind Haven, we wouldn't be watching. So hey, you gotta actually have some product for us to try it again. So
it is just a treat, this show. It is everything I've been wanting for a while. I guess I'm scared now because it might get canceled. But
no, this is not going to get canceled. Because
really?
They know what they've got. They know what they've got. So this is not like Fox. See, Sci-Fi Channel desperately needs an actual sci-fi show, and the New Guard is actually trying to do this. So for them to have to hit it out of the park with this, they're going to glom onto this.
I wonder if any of our listeners know like what the change happened. Like Matt, do you know about this? What happened to Sci-Fi Channel to where? They actually have actual sci-fi on it.
Yeah, or? Got rid of the
somebody
wrestling.
Somebody got fired and somebody got a new job.
They should have. I mean, how long had we been going through that? So it's about darn time. About time.
Well, they've been through a lot of changes too, in and out.
Wasn't that Bonnie Hammer?
I don't know.
She got rid of Farscape.
Brilliant. That was,
that was the one that hated sci-fi. I think that wasn't that the one that hated science fiction?
Bonnie, I never forget that name.
She got that job, but she was not a fan of science fiction.
Like, no,
that makes total sense. You could tell she didn't like science fiction, given where the show, I mean, where everything went.
Corporate decision.
No, but honestly, though, but how did, because I still don't know, I haven't done my research, like, I still don't know how this product came out so well. I mean, even if they were trying to make real sci-fi, just because you're trying doesn't mean it's actually going to happen.
Right.
And there are many, many aspects of this show that are like really the way things should be for me in a lot of shows. And I don't know how the stars finally aligned, considering I'm sure they've been trying and trying since BSG left.
I don't believe that they've been trying, though. I don't because, okay, here's the thing. Again, what it seemed like they were trying to do this thing where they were expanding the concept of science fiction. Like, science fiction isn't huge enough. It was like they were trying to cross it over into more popular culture to try. So the themes wouldn't be what they thought were niche-y. But it was like they were afraid to really focus in on the core themes of what made science fiction great. So, but yeah, what?
No, I completely agree with that part, and I know kind of which shows you're talking about, but I'm also thinking about some of the near misses of right. trying to do this type of thing, and to me, some of the near misses were Stargate Universe, and for me, nope. Dark Matter and Killjoys.
Yeah.
And actually, I like all three of those shows a bit, but I have, like, little issues with all three of them, like, little things that just bother me personally. They may not bother all of us here, but The Expanse somehow avoids all the little pitfalls
there's a big difference between Killjoys and Stargate Universe. Okay,
but
I'm just trying to say that
there are definite differences, but the three shows still fall into certain little puddles that are personal to me that I pick up on just different shows, and somehow The Expanse steps around them. Like, for instance, even though the three shows I'm naming are especially Killjoys is different, but it's not their differences on top. It's what they share. What they all share, Universe, Dark Matter, and Killjoys, is that they're all, like, you can tell they're all on a budget. Mm-hmm. They use the same two or three sets on their ships. If they ever step out of their ships, it's very obviously Canada.
Yeah, Canadian. They are Canadian.
But the majority of the actors on all these three shows, you can tell, or many of them are Canadians themselves.
Right.
Yada, yada, yada. And Expanse, I mean, maybe it is something Canada, well, it probably is.
It is.
Maybe, oh, yeah, but even so, it doesn't feel like it. I mean, somehow you can tell a show's in Canada, even if they're in the studio, you can still tell they're in the Canadian studio. I'm being honest.
Yeah.
It's true. That's why we're laughing.
But Expanse somehow, like, no, it works. Like, it doesn't feel that way at all. And the set design, and they're, like, I'm constantly blown away. Like, I'm wondering, are they blowing budgets left and right? Because they're constantly changing the setting. To cover, like, three main planets and to be on multiple different space stations and ships, what?
Yes.
No,
yes.
Show, even Star Trek on television, its heyday, couldn't pull that off as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, and make it look so realistic.
Well, you got to look at the show creators, though, for The Expanse. I mean, he's worked on Children of Men and Iron Man. I mean, even though you throw in Cowboys and Aliens, but you can't be great all the time.
It looked good.
But, I mean, Children of Men, you know, that's crazy.
Children of Men is amazing.
That don't get me started on this. Go on.
Despite what Iron Man say, Children of Men is amazing.
Either way, it's not a movie that's talked about as bad often. That says something to get somebody like that to be on the show. I mean,
let me just, because again, I really, Eric, you got to put a difference between Stargate Universe and Killjoys and Dark Matter. And here are the main reasons. Let me say why I think it's because Stargate Universe actually had a serious budget. Stargate Universe had the right look in terms of the effects and scale of what it was that they were trying to achieve. It did not have the same bottle look that I see, and I know what you're talking about with Killjoys and Dark Matter. I get that. I can see it. But Stargate Universe did not have that same smallness about it compared to those two series.
I'll agree not as bad. I agree, though. Again, I like Stargate Universe.
I don't think the writing was good.
No, you are the only one. No one liked it. But what I'm saying is, with the new series, with Killjoys and Dark Matter, what's going on is they're trying to. It's a common trend with science fiction where those shows are clearly less expensive, but they are having more of a playful kind of experience with science fiction than what they're doing with The Expanse. It is these two shows. I'm not going to call them old sci-fi. I'm not going to even call them old sci-fi because they actually have. They're really in space. They're really dealing with some interesting topics and everything. But so what's the difference between those two shows and Expanse really boils down to budget and scope of what they're trying to achieve. And so here's the other thing. You got to fill the programming in on Sci-Fi Channel. I absolutely, totally believe they are blowing massive budgets on The Expanse because it is crazy expensive to do what they are doing on that show. And I respect it and I like that. But you still need, you know, little room for smaller budget explorations into science fiction, which is what you're seeing with Killjoys and Dark Matter. And I appreciate
Killjoys feels like the old syndication.
Yeah, really. There you go. That's what I'm trying to say. They both have that kind of 90s syndicated kind of fun, like Andromeda when it was good.
It's got a place.
In order to pay for stuff like The Expanse,
you got to keep the lights on, and
it's not saying that the shows are not, you know, good. It's just that they're different. You cannot have back-to-back Expanses and be able to afford your network. I really don't want, you know, those two shows to be lumped in with the same thing as Universe, because Stargate Universe, which bothered me the most about it, and this is all I'm going to say, is that they had the budget and they had the inertia that Expanse does, and they totally squandered it. So they did not do that with The Expanse, and I'm just thrilled.
Yeah, I mean, I agree pretty much with, everything Carl just said.
Yeah. I agree.
I'll say what you meant, though, Eric.
I agree with myself, too, but I also
agree. Oh, my God, whatever.
You say so myself.
No, they work together. I just
think it's so rich. It was so enjoyable. I hope it's around for a long time. I hope it picks up steam.
It certainly should be, unless, like, someone decides to just quit and walk away, or I mean, because they'd have to really screw it up. Yeah. And plus, I mean, it's based on a pre-existing work, right? Which I'm not familiar with, but I would like to be more familiar with.
What, The Expanse?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like I want to say book series, and see, that bodes well. And I still don't know much about it, but I hope there's a lot to it. You know, I don't really know, like, the size of the series or whatever. But I mean, if it's anything, not that anything's as big as Game of Thrones besides Harry Potter, but I mean, if it's something like that can go that long, go that distance, that would just be amazing.
Yeah, well, they have a fabulous foundation. I mean, seriously, the characters are good, the actors are solid, the environment, the space they created is really, really intriguing.
Yeah, all the world building. That world building like this is BSG.
Yeah, and these are actual worlds. You know, BSG, well, you know, are just, you know, different ships. But yeah.
The Expanse has 11 books, so I mean,
that's expansive.
There you go.
Not a little thing. This is something popular.
And I haven't read any spoilers, but it almost seems like you can see little hints that maybe there's a lot more to come much later, possibly. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They've been. The arcs have been just incredible. Well,
it started in 2011, and it's got books all the way to next year. So
very planned. Cool.
I'm very interested. I'm very excited to read more about the book series.
And you know what? Even Thomas Jane is good in this.
Yeah, seriously.
I never had anything against him, so I don't know what to say.
Well, we joke because he always seemed like a fill-in for an actor that they couldn't get. You know,
I
don't know if I've said this before in SFPL, but I don't know if you knew this about that. But for years, that actor who you're speaking of, I kept thinking he was the guy from the original Highlander.
What? No.
I know it's not the same person now, but I'm saying the first times I would see Jane in a role on whatever, I just thought he was the same guy from the original Highlander. Took me a while till I realized he was a separate person, is what I'm trying to say.
See, that's exactly what Carl was saying.
I mean, I just
that's what I'm saying. I'm backing got, him up. That's what I I'm just, saying. This is a
he's
true
got
story.
That kind of look about him. But he's finally gotten a role for himself, and it's a good role, and he's going to be, you know, remembered. This is it's a good time. It's a good time for everybody.
Well, he's been looking for, like, I've seen him at cons and stuff, and people have talked to him. He's desperately been looking for a franchise to get involved with.
Well, good.
Like one that he feels, you know, like he can just dig into. And whatever it is with his luck, he's just never been able to get into one yet until now.
Speaking of, do you think that's his real hair, or is that like a hair extension?
Extension.
I keep going back and forth.
Extension.
That's probably extension. Yeah. He'd never seen him with long. I've never seen him with long hair.
I was just wondering, because at first I thought, wow, this is pretty amazing if he's committing that much. But I couldn't tell for sure. I'm just being honest.
He would, though. He is one of the masters. He would do it, but I don't think he had the ability to grow that much.
Because I actually kind of like, whether it's real or not, I kind of like that his character has that, like, going on underneath his hat. Like, it's probably a metaphor, for his character.
Oh, man. So we're really doing this. We're doing the Expanse now. All right. Yes, Kat?
Bro, I thought we were wrapping it up. Because I was getting ready to move on to the next show.
But no, you can't stop the Expanse now. So open up the floodgates now. So here we go.
It's a party. It's a party, and we're doing what we want. And as long as people are going to be listening, whatever, I don't
just
care.
Just the fact in the opening episode when they had that character who had Marfan syndrome, because of the low gravity, the people with the long limbs, like just having a simple visual like that, I was already like, wow, they don't even do this like in any show. Like, just that on its own, I thought, holy cow, that we're playing with something different. Ridiculous.
As I watched the show, I realized, when you're watching the show, you realize how much you have compromised on science fiction for so long. Here, let me see if I can go through them, because they were coming to me as I'm watching. I'm like, dang.
Stargate.
Well, first of all, this is the smallest darn thing. The fact that they are actually in space periods of time is something that for years, it's been almost 10 years back to good old Galactica since we've seen actual ships in space. People doing stuff
and get this.
One of my biggest complaints about old Galactica is it had beautiful external shots, but that crappy shaky cam thing that they would do, we're spending $8 million rendering the scene, but we don't know where the ship's going to appear in space, and the camera's jacking all around, so you couldn't appreciate the effects. Holy crap! To be able to see beauty shots of spaceships that are rendered well, and moving and obeying physics, it was just so beautiful to see. They're big, janky, raggedy ships doing stuff. They had a space battle early in the show. A bona fide, a Galactica scale battle where you lost a starship and you had the fighters and there was a, gun battle across the bay. And they stole a ship. I mean, it was just all of this stuff that had been literally sprinkled just lightly in whole bands of series from before. For like 10 years, we hadn't seen this kind of stuff. They are cramming this stuff in one episode, the next episode. Here's another thing. I was thrilled with how the direction the Expanse was going. I was so excited with the development. I was enjoying the space. I was loving the ships and all the technology. The character development was great. Didn't even dawn on me that I was perfectly comfortable watching a science fiction show with no aliens or extraterrestrial stuff in it. All this stuff that we've gotten used to watching, these pseudo sci-fi shows where it's just about people and people of different eras. But maybe people on Mars and people on Earth, but that's all. To finally get a freaking alien that's, infesting people. And actual aliens in a sci-fi program, they just one Shut after another. Up. You're sitting here and you're going, holy crap, I'm actually getting all of this in one series and in the first season. So, man, the Expanse is just hitting it out of the park, one thing after the next, and they are not stopping.
Unlike a lot of these other failed shows we had talked about like 4 hours ago, like with Heroes and other things, like Expanse is also juggling like the whole multiple setting, multiple like plot lines. You're actually engaged, and you actually don't get too confused. Like, you can follow Jane's story. You can follow the guys on the ship, You can follow the people on Earth.
It started with a trade dispute and is interesting. How about that?
Yeah.
How about that? Really?
But it actually works. I don't want to compare it too much to Game of Thrones, but like Game of Thrones, which also does it well, like characters can be in completely different places and never interact with each other directly, but you're still okay with it for the most part.
I felt and Game of Thrones too there, Eric. I agree with you on that.
It's got that.
And but I'm saying few shows can really pull it off. Like it's usually done very poorly when anyone else tries to do it. But Expanse has been pulling it off so far. Where I actually care, like, oh, we're back to his, like he's doing the whole noir thing, you know, like Blade Runner trying to figure out it works.
Gumshoe.
And you have the political arm on Earth and what they're doing there.
You got the Galactic.
Then you have the ragtag. You have like three shows in one.
It's Firefly. I mean, seriously, it's all of that in one show. It's serious.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you look at
if
you look at the filmography of the writer, it's two writers and producers on this show. They don't really have a long list of work.
Well,
it's amazing that they could do that, because a lot of these shows we named that got canceled. I mean, these are people that have been doing shows for, you know, you look at a long list of other shows that probably got canceled too.
It's really shocking, because I still can't believe it's on Sissy, because this should be more like if HBO or Showtime is attempting to do like a sci-fi show for their channels. It to me, it's very much more like that. And actually, we should maybe do that, because then we could get some boobs, because that's the only thing missing.
Oh, my God.
Okay,
Eric, we're done with you for today.
No, I'm just saying, because it's got everything else. That's reason you know it's on Syfy is because of that. That's the only tell that it has.
This is the new management, and I'm not going to call it Syfy anymore, because I used to call it Syfy to imply that they weren't actual sci-fi. I'm going to call them Sci-Fi Channel again now, because this is the new guard, and so they've re-earned their sci-fi credit.
Well, they might have got
the new guard, but they need to change the spelling back to sci-fi, because
it might have helped them that these people, that the people they have working on the show haven't done a lot of
stuff. They're not going to be conservative,
right.
And they're not going to try to make it like something that has quote worked in the past. So they're going to be free.
And they probably took a pay cut. I mean, they probably, because they haven't had that much experience, probably have a little bit of a pay cut. But if they can create something that is well received, I mean, that bodes well for them getting a lot of other gigs. So I can see them going in hard on this.
And if you are a sci-fi writer or you produce science fiction, your idea shouldn't be to create massive quantities of stuff. It should be, that might be your goal, but if you look at the history of the people who produce good science fiction, they get one or two really good opportunities. And they just, you know, they make it work and they explore those spaces. Those folks that try to get into sci-fi and dabble, they're the ones that just mess everything up, because, you know, they always are, their eyes are on the next project and they're not focused. You can't do science fiction. Like, you can't expect fans, because sci-fi fans get invested. So you can't be dabbling in creating whole universes. You can't be, you know, just playing around with a character development that is supposed to last for 3-year character, 4-year characters. You can't just wing that out the gate. You got to put some thought into it. So,
well, usually there's that big usually when they build something that's a franchise out of a sci-fi show, it's got that one person that's the boss, and he this is his vision, and he keeps it steady that that's what he wants, you know, like a J. Michael Straczynski or a Roddenberry, or, you know, like there's always that one guy, even for
Ronald D. Moore,
there's that one guy that's like, I don't care what you tell me, this is what I want, this is what I'm, you know, going to work towards, and that's it. But
which is very different than, say, how Spielberg does it. For when his shows come on, you can tell he walked into the room. He said, okay, I'm going to put some money behind this. We're going to do this, this, and this. Go. And then he disappears, and he's off to doing something else.
Have you ever heard what – you should check interviews of people that have worked on some of those Spielberg shows.
Yeah.
Because what happens is they get something like, you know what? I want a dinosaur with a horn that runs through a forest. And then and that's it. No thought.
Are you talking about Terra Nova?
Yeah. Jesus, like I heard the writers that worked on that show, it was hell. They would. He would not give you details on how we get to that point, what we do with the characters, what all he would come in and give the notes would come down, and he'd be like, listen, I want a dinosaur running through the forest with a horn on the head. Do it. And then you have to work around that.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know what's going on with that, but but seriously, when it comes to science fiction on TV, you got to be invested. You really do. You have to care about the space that you're creating. You got to care about the characters. You got to create arcs that make sense and create a believable world to inhabit. Otherwise, it's just going to come off schlocky, and then people are going to say science fiction doesn't succeed.
Okay, I got one. Before we get into too much Carl Robo ministering. Expanse was good, but how did y'all feel about Sense8?
It sounded like it would be good. It did. It sounded like it would be
good. Yeah, you gotta push in the clutch first before you shift the gear.
I wanted to shift the gear because he was talking about all these building and all this stuff. But you know what I'm saying?
A little clutch.
No. I just wanted to go straight there because he was talking about the characters. He was talking about people who have vision, and the Wachowskis have that overreaching vision. And they had a chance to do that. They had a chance to do that with this Sense8 thing.
Well, they got season 2 coming, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
I'm not watching it. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to watch it. I watched the full thing, and it's not horrible,
no.
Sense8. No, Carl, no. I think Carl died because I don't hear anything. As soon as that came out of my mouth and he was talking about the Expanse, he just
Because
nothing.
I'm talking about good stuff. Look, I'm trying to make a point, and then you throw that in there, and that is totally not at all what I was saying. I was giving you a chance to give me whatever reason you had for throwing that in right now.
I was trying to explain why I threw it in and why it came to mind. I'm sorry.
I mean, and then you wonder why I'm not saying anything. I'm like, this crap. Okay, look, for starters, we just said the idea was to bring some new talent in who aren't restricted by, you know, the tomes that they've used in the past or things that they've done in the past, so they would be creative and not, you know, safe. They weren't going to be safe. The Wachowskis have a one theme in all of their movies, in everything that they do, they just keep trying to put a different costume on. It's the same story. Oh, people as Cal. I mean, you know, they just keep trying to do this again. So it just, you can't even start with them. That's not a good example to even bring up right now.
Well, you know, I think it's something that M. Night suffers from too, where
yes, he does.
And other creators that have had these problems. You get to a point where you don't even know how to write characters anymore because you're so far away from how regular people interact, how people think. It's true though. You reach that certain point, you're kind of in a bubble of you don't know how to write characters anymore, like how they do things, how they work, how they relate to each other and all those type of things, but you have this vision that you want this certain thing written a certain way, and you want these themes put there, and you constantly are putting those themes out there, but you don't get people there. You have to bring us to the table. You have to move people towards that. And if you don't know how to write humans and you don't know how to write how characters are, you are always going to have a problem. You're always going to come off crazy and creepy, like the Wachowskis come off creepy now in the things they do. Whatever their name is, brother, sister, whatever. It's just they're so weird.
Oh, you're just saying Lana is weird. I think she was brave, but I don't.
No. I'm talking about the stories that they write are so weird now. It's more weird than new and innovative and fresh and all that. It's just weird. The dog run, you got a space dog, you got, like, it's just so many things they throw in, and it's just so...
Space dog in Galactica.
That's very Hanna-Barbera, space dogs. You throw that in.
Nah, it's
just so... And Sense8 was the same thing. Like, I thought they were gonna, when they talked about it, I thought, oh, it's gonna go somewhere. Like, maybe this will be somewhere to go somewhere. No, it just was just.
It was a torture to watch.
Yes, it was just a lot of people feeling pain.
Yeah, it was just a lot of feelings and pain. And like they can connect, but we never really understood the science of it. Right. You had all these people doing things. It was nice, but I felt like there was an agenda because Lana has changed or evolved into her.
Saw some of that in there too.
You know, yeah. Evolved into herself now, mm-hmm. and I felt like that was really heavy-handedly sprinkled into that.
Right.
And it's not that I don't want to see it; it's just that I don't want the heavy hand of it.
It's fine to do right. It's like it's fine to do that, but how do we get to that point? Like you just can't hit somebody over the head and go here, and not. Take us to that point. You
right.
Bring the audience. We don't all have that experience. So you have to, when you write something, you got to write it so that other people that don't understand your experience or don't have never been through something like that, how do we look at that? How do we get to that?
And that's, I'm glad you said that, Daryl, is because. But before, like, I mean, I guess I was a typical person where you're just like, oh, gay people are bad or whatever. But it took an episode of Star Trek to make me understand how gay people are just like normal people. They just happen to love differently. And it was this episode where Jadzia Dax met one of her lovers who was not in a male body anymore. She was in a female body.
Mm-hmm.
But they still had love for each other and how love does not know color, gender, freaking blindness, right. whatever. And it took that way of explaining it for me to be like, oh shit, this is beautiful. Mm-hmm. But the way the Wachowskis did it, it just felt like a hammer on my head. I'm going to force you to see this type of character. And this is what this character, and we're going to constantly talk about. And we're going to constantly. And it was just, it overtook the art of it. And then they have this thing where they feel like they have like an old school orientalism fetish or something mm-hmm. that they kind of put into it, and it was almost offensive. And I don't know if I'm saying it properly or whatever, if that makes sense to anyone. But
I get it. It's like, well, let's be real.
I feel like you're sometimes, talking about Cloud Atlas right now.
What do you say?
I feel like you're talking about Cloud Atlas right now.
Cloud Atlas. Well, yeah, I'm talking too. About. Yeah, it was in Sense8 as
there's
well.
There's sometimes some white people who are in the arts.
Like we don't have to say it that way, but
well, I'm being real about it.
Well, no,
okay. Like, there's certain people that have they love a culture, and they're even though they're not from that culture, but they love it. But when they kind of introduce it into their projects. Sometimes the way they introduce it is not, it's so heavy
mm-hmm.
that it, instead of it being you showing how beautiful that culture is, it comes off as if,
yeah,
like you're kind of making a,
you're mocking it.
Yeah. Mocking it. Like it comes off as mocking it when probably in overall, you probably wanted to introduce it as this is beautiful. A lot of martial art movies went through that era of they loved martial arts. They saw that over in China, Japan and all that. And they wanted to bring it here. But because they don't really, just because you love something doesn't mean you understand it as well. When they tried to adapt it here, a lot of that stuff came, it didn't work because it kind of was like a farce. It was like you're making fun of the culture of martial arts and what they do and that kind of thing. And that kind of is what they give off a little bit when they, on these last few things that they've
I'm glad done. I didn't just feel like
I
that.
I thought you were going to say there, I thought I was going to say like as if they fetishize it.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm with y'all. Okay. I thought it was okay. I got through the parts that were maybe a little bit difficult to get through. I thought it was okay. I did like that it looked real slick, and it looked, again, Netflix. It looked ridiculously expensive, the show.
It was.
Yeah, well, I think it really was, like many other Netflix shows. But that's not a bad thing. I mean, they're shooting, like, all around the world for this thing.
Right.
So it was,
they did, and it felt like they did.
Oh, no, they did. And it was nice to look at, and it was okay. Like, they could have done worse. The Wachowskis could have done far worse. If you've ever seen any of their films, they've done worse.
Well, I think they pulled the pullback with JMS working on it, probably.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, he worked on that. They produced it, but he was the one that...
Oh, did you hear he's coming out with a new B5?
No, I heard rumors, but it's confirmed?
Oh, I thought the rumors were confirmed. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I'm asking. You could be right. I don't know.
Anybody, Carl?
No, I don't know for sure. Yeah. I heard rumors, but I wouldn't say.
I thought the rumors were it.
I don't know if you can go home again. You probably lost a lot of the...
Have you seen, like, the last few BSG movies? Not BSG, B5 movies?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if he could go home again because he tried to do them, and now that you know, so many of the actors that made that show what it is, great, in my opinion, are sadly passed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. You'd have to do new actors, but I don't know if he could pull that off again.
Carl, you were quiet. You didn't watch Sense8, did you?
I watched one, and that was
one.
Yeah,
he's that's blessed right there because.
No, I mean that's I could, but because there are with only seeing one, there are some bits that are worse, but there are also bits that are better. Like when you get further on.
I mean, I get sadness in a show.
Though. Yeah,
I get the sadness. Like a lot of shows are doing that now. I'm all for it. I like dark shows.
I don't. The
sadness and all that kind of stuff, which is if you do it right, it could work. But there it gets to a point where it's just, I am sad. I don't get to have the life that I want. I'm feeling restricted in my life. And that's every episode of that show of Sense8. Every episode was, I don't get to be who I want to be. I don't get to have my true identity. And I get it. I understand that one of them went through something where they felt like they were uncomfortable in their skin and they weren't who they wanted to be. Got it. But if that's all you're going to, all the characters are only going to all say the same thing of I'm sad because I don't get to be who I'm going to be, and you don't move anywhere from that, it just feels torture. It's torture.
I'll just add one more bit of real talk to the Sense8. And that is just that a particular close friend of mine, I've been badgering them like for, you know, nearly a year now, like, you got to watch Daredevil. You got to watch Daredevil. And this person's not really motivated, you know, to watch Daredevil. Fine, whatever. I kept saying, it's so good. You got to watch it. Yeah. And then this same person was like, oh, yeah, Sense8. And I'm like, yeah, you've seen it? Yeah. Isn't that so good? And I almost fell out the window right there. What? I know you watch so much stuff, and I know you don't have very much time to watch things. Right. You watched all of Sense8, and you didn't watch Daredevil. I was like, what the hell is going on? But I'm bringing this up for a reason because of some of the stuff that we're just talking about right now and what they try to hammer pretty hard in Sense8. For this particular person, friend of mine, it, like, really spoke to them. They really identified with it. So, and I realize that's probably not a majority opinion, but for this particular person, they thought it was very interesting, and they liked what it was delving into. Because
it did
what
well been talking. For them.
And I get it. I mean, obviously, I'm not as intrigued by that, but mm-hmm. I'm just saying, just, like, voicing a minority opinion. That this person like was really engaged and actually watched the whole thing, and it's still
they don't watch good stuff
or Jessica Jones, and I was just like, oh, mind blown, but I understand you better now.
There are plenty of people that dig the show because it did get quite a bit of view, even though Netflix never tells you the deal. But to do in another season for an expensive show like this, they're not going to just throw money down the hallway.
Who's watching it? Show of hands. Nobody, because we can't see anybody.
Well, my friend is, but yeah.
I ain't watching it.
Well, I go down to money. People don't like to waste money. Mm. There's no incentive to do this show again if nobody's been clicking that button and watching those episodes.
Well, what is it going to be?
Well, how the heck is Marco Polo getting a season 2?
Seriously?
You'd be surprised. There's quite a few people at work that did Marco Polo.
I didn't think it was terrible. I didn't finish it either. Mm. But it just seemed like everyone just like tried to pretend like it never happened, like as soon as it came out.
But that show again goes to some of those syndicated action movies like Relic Hunter and stuff like that. It kind of it does. I mean, and it had an audience though. I mean, there are people that
were, I was just surprised. I mean, I was just surprised because it seemed like Netflix almost didn't want to talk about it. Like after a week, they were like, "Yeah, never mind. Let's talk about Orange Is the New Black." By the way, people, so. You know, like,
I don't think that show is as expensive for them to do.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying no. I'm sure Orange Is the New Black is done on the cheap, which Netflix probably loves. It's probably the most inexpensive show they have, and probably like the most popular show in a certain demographic that they have as well.
Okay. So you know what? I have my list here, and this is very fortuitous that we have Eric here to talk about that. And hang on, because I'm not gonna do the clutch right. So we're going to talk about Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
The new news.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I guess Freema Agyeman was in Sense8, and she was also in Doctor Who, so I guess.
Yes, there you go. Okay. Oh,
but well done.
Yeah. Well done. Wow, nice.
That's
very graceful.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay, so Doctor Who. Carl, I know I've do you watch Daryl?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I know Carl, I've heard some of his opinion on the whole of Doctor Who, but I don't think maybe we've done a Doctor Who episode since Matt Smith. So
No. You did one last year.
We did?
Yeah, I think you did.
Yeah, I wasn't there, but you guys
I remember
were
hearing
there.
It.
Oh, boy. Yeah. He always knows when he's not there. But anyway, so we have second year of Capaldi. Is it second year of Capaldi or the first year?
Absolutely.
It's the second year?
Second year.
What are we thinking? I'm still okay with him. I'm still fine.
I like him, but I've been really disappointed with the storytelling. Up and down of the storytelling this season.
I will say that it's been up and down for me. Some of them have been less engaging. I think the eye booger episode was just one of the most heinous things to have ever happened to TV ever.
That was so ridiculous. Oh, that was utterly preposterous.
Was time. Like it every time I would see an episode, I'd get hope that it's a little, it's getting somewhere, and then they would do another one, like, and then I'd be like, I think I do. I'm not one of the haters of what's his name?
Moffat.
Of Moffat, but I do now understand when people have been saying he has a thing he does over and over again, and maybe it's time to.
Well, the eye booger thing wasn't his thing, but he certainly has his hand in other things of where he repeats himself for sure. I'm not going to say too much about this just because I go into this at great length on the other podcast. But the last series, it was good times. For me personally, it's probably one of the strongest ones out of all the new ones. Series 9, for me personally.
What? Out of all of what?
All the 1 through 9. All the 1 through 9.
Actually, are you kidding me?
No,
you saying that Capaldi's season was stronger to you than a Matt Smith season? That seems highly unlikely for you.
It's better than Series 6 or Series 7. Yes, of course.
Same.
It's not that shocking.
That is shocking, because I just wanted to make sure you knew what you were saying, because that sounds like crazy talk coming from you.
No, Matt Smith is still like my favorite doctor and all that, but Capaldi's Series 9, not Series 8, Series 9, it's right next to Series 5, which is my favorite, Series 5. It's, like, right next to that for me. But that's not to disparage Series 7 with Matt Smith or anything. Series 6 is the problematic series. But, no, it was really good. It was in strong, like, I've already felt Series 8, his first year, was pretty good. And then Series 9, for me personally, was very good. Very good.
It had some high ups.
Oh, yeah. And I was glad and very surprised that Moffat was able to pull something out, like in his fourth run or whatever. And also, I mean, like, we talked about it more on the other podcast, but if you, like, break things down one by one, and you kind of, like, if you just give, like, episodes a thumbs up or thumbs down, and then, like, compare it to other, like, Series 6 or series 4 or whatever, and you do the same thing, thumbs up, thumbs down, like episode by episode. The way we did it on our show, on Mostly Harmless Cutaway, series 9 comes out extremely strong.
Interesting.
So, I mean, it kind of sort of just works out that way. Because most of us agreed on the other podcast that, like, we kind of liked every single episode of Series 9, except for the Sleep No More. But other than, I mean, everything was pretty good. And we can't really say that about any other year of New Doctor Who. At least we can't.
Well,
but,
I don't know.
But yeah, but it had some, what I think is more interesting now, I don't know how much you guys are up on the, like, the current newest news about Doctor Who going forward. Right. I mean, many people already know in this year, 2016, in the fall, we're going to get the spinoff show called Class that takes place at the school where Clara taught. That's its own separate thing. But that's, like, really the only Doctor Who sort of that we're getting, because the only thing with the actual Doctor and the TARDIS, we're only getting a Christmas special in 2016.
Right. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I thought you saw that.
No, I'm not kidding.
No.
So that's interesting. That's interesting to me.
It's taking a whole year off? I mean,
yeah, but that ain't it. That ain't it.
Gap year special?
Yeah, we're not done yet.
We're not done, Kat.
So then, sometime in 2017 is when the Doctor returns, and we don't know if we'll get half in 17 and half in 18 or whatever. No one knows that part. But it'll be Stephen Moffat's last year. Mm-hmm.
Wait, he's not done now. We still got to wait another. We're gonna have a year with that.
Yeah, through 2017, his final year. It'll be Stephen Moffat's final year. Will be the series 10. Now it's up in the air, since it will be his final year, and we all know it. Does that mean it'll be Capaldi's last year?
It might be, because he talked.
Or will
like
he continue to the next? No one knows that, but it's definitely an interesting question.
But he's kind of been talking that way, though.
Yeah, but who's to say? I mean, especially because we're talking about a 2-year time span, practically.
Right.
So who knows what can happen? Oh, if you haven't seen him with his beard that he has currently, by the way, he looks really cool with a beard.
I've seen him Capaldi. With a beard.
Yeah. And then Chris Chibnall is going to be the new producer to take the reins from Moffat.
Is he good? Is everybody excited about that?
Well, no. People are this way and that way because he's previously written episodes on Doctor Who.
Which
I can't
one?
Think of them off the top. Someone look at it. I don't have a computer right here next to me. I wasn't prepared for this. But if you go back and look at his episodes, and he did a bunch of Torchwood episodes as well.
Shit.
He was involved a lot with Torchwood. His most famous episode that people love to flag, everyone keeps bringing it. He was the one who wrote the Cyberwoman episode, if you guys remember that one.
I didn't hate that one.
I think it's okay, but most quote-unquote Doctor Who fans absolutely hate Cyberwoman, that episode.
Well, that's because a lot of them are racist assholes and they don't know.
Okay, well, they would tell you they just think it's a very empty story, but whatever.
For Torchwood, that was one of the better ones.
Torchwood made me cry.
I think Carl meant the episode of Torchwood.
Oh, it was.
That is what I am
saying.
So
he did 42, The Hungry Earth, Cold Blood, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, The Power of Three, and The Magicians.
All those episodes you just named, these are all episodes that are very split with fans. Like, a lot of people don't like all those ones you just named. There's some people who like some of them. Like, I like some of them, but no one's like, those are like all gems. Like, no one thinks that. So that is why a lot of fans have been like, this doesn't look good.
But he did Broadchurch, and I just watched that, and that was really good, Broadchurch.
Yeah, yes. And people have mentioned that as well. So there's that. I personally have, like, the least feelings of anyone of my Doctor Who friends I know. Meaning, I'm not sad that Moffat's leaving. I'm not happy that he's leaving. I'm not scared of Chris Chibnall coming in. I'm so just like, hey, whatever. It'll just come when it comes, and then I'll see how I feel about it then. But I'm not being pre-angsty like a lot of my Doctor Who friends. I'm not concerned. And I'm fine with it. I'm fine with not getting much Doctor Who in 2016. Because I have other things to think about. In TV land and podcasting, so it's fine. It's all good. But it is interesting still to think about, you know, how things might be down the road.
Well, is Carl, are you still there, babe?
I'm right here. First of all, if you ask a Doctor Who question, I'm always going to wait for Eric to give his answer. I mean, seriously, why you would even expect me to try
that
to chime in?
That was my short version. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're like, we're going to wrap up this episode.
I thought you were still mad about Eric, me for talking about Sensei and Expanse.
No.
You still pissed about Expanse.
No. I'm saying that, you know, like you said, we're going to wrap up this episode, but let's have Eric talk about Doctor Who. Yeah, that's right.
I didn't say anything about wrapping up the
episode.
I wasn't
expecting Kat to bring that up. I thought she was going to ask me about Wayward Pines or something. But.
Yeah. No. The quick answer is I agree with him 100%. First of all, Capaldi's one of my favorite doctors now.
He's a cranky old man.
He's awesome. This past season, definitely one of the strongest. The last two episodes. You know what? I'll say the last three episodes. And now Eric and I, we haven't had a chance to talk about this. But even River's return for Christmas was well done, wasn't it? The last two of the season episodes were fantastic, and then for them to do so well with the River episode too, man, it was this was a great season. So yeah, I liked it a lot. It was awesome.
Cool. I'm glad we agree,
Daryl.
I just was kind of glad Moffat was leaving. I think he was tuning. I really think he's tuned out. I think he's the other shows. I think he's a little bit more excited about the other shows he's doing. I think he's more into that, and that kind of, he's more excited about those kind of shows, and he's just not as hyped about this one. And I think that it shows. It kind of shows in the consistency of the stories.
I mean, speaking of that, I mean, I don't know who else saw the Sherlock special that happened.
I can't even find it online.
I'm sure it's there somewhere. But anyway, I mean, I don't know. Well, I guess you haven't seen it. No spoilers. Because it's super spoilery if you haven't seen it. More so than a typical episode of Sherlock. I thought it was flipping amazing. Like, I mean, because I know Kat... Like, I was the same as you in that I haven't thought about Sherlock in a whole year. I wasn't, like, dying for it to return or anything like that. And so, therefore, I wasn't necessarily excited and I didn't know what to expect. But after having seen it, I was like, wow. Like, it's awesome. It's brilliant. Moffat is doing good there. And I wish I could say more. But if you ever get around to seeing it, you'll understand why I can't say anything, because it's like Force Awakens, like for someone who hasn't seen it. You can't really say too much because then you get into like big spoilers. But it was great. So yeah, and cool. If Moffat gets to focus more on Sherlock, because that was a one-off special sort of, but I think there's going to be three new ones sometime in the future, you know, down the road. Mm-hmm. So fine, let him focus on that. It's some good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have the torches and pitchforks like some people do. I see online now, but
I'm glad, I guess, because I don't need them to leave. But I understand that a lot of people need them to leave, and so if it gets people to chill out for at least a second, I guess I'm okay with that, because people with their Moffat hate are just completely out of control, and they've been out of control for like 2 or 3 years, and I get it. But all right, yeah. Well. I hope they're happy with Chibnall, you know.
Well, but I doubt they'll be happy with anything.
I doubt it too, but okay, whatever. What can you do? Yeah.
Is Clara's gonna be in this class the spinoff or no?
No, they keep saying no.
Okay. Yeah, she got a lot of hate too.
Well, she had a lot of hate, especially, I mean, not to make it like in 8. She had a lot of hate in 8. But a lot of the haters came back around by the time we got to the end of Series 9. A lot of the Clara haters really came around. Not all of them, but many of them came back around when we got to like the finale and whatnot. So, yeah.
That's good.
I think she's been the most...
Divisive?
No, I was saying... I guess she is. Before I was going to say that, I was thinking maybe after Rose, did people like, what was the one after Rose? Comedian. No, the comedian one.
That's Donna.
Donna. Did the people like Donna?
They loved her. They flipped her.
Okay, so
I
guess she is the most divisive then, is Ben Clare then.
Yeah, you could say that because, I mean, unfortunately, many people agree that they don't like Martha as much. Mm. So, like, that's not divisive.
Oh, there's some of that. There's some of that.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm saying people agree to not like her. So, right. And then Amy was a little bit, I guess. But no, yeah, but you're right. Of the new show, Clara is probably the most divisive of the companions. Mm. Probably. And we still don't know for sure if the new companion is going to be in the 2016 Christmas special or if we have to wait till 17.
Right. Nobody knows. Did they even say why it was taking so long? Is he doesn't know what he wants to do?
They did give a reason. I mean, if you can take it however you want, if it's legit or they're just saying that. But they were saying that the BBC had, like, there was so many other special things that were happening in 2016. I know the Olympics was one of the things.
And there was, like, right.
There was a couple other things. I don't remember what they were. They might be British things. Or, I mean, more British significant or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Some other big things. And so they said that it was sort of, like, better to, like, save the Doctor Who for 2017 when they have, I guess, less going on that year. So that was, like,
the
official
I've ever heard.
Yeah, but no, I understand that sounds ridiculous, especially if that was said, like, on an American channel about an American show. But you just have to understand that this has nothing to do with Doctor Who. England is just, it's always been so different when it comes to how they do their programming and their shows. Like, let me tell you this. I don't know if you guys know that this is something they do in England that they've always done. Like, when they roll out their new shows for a season or whatever on British TV, they like to compete with each other, right? Like, the channels against each other. Like, they have, like, their hit shows. So it'd be like this. If we talk about, like, American shows, let's just pretend, like, Supernatural's really popular and Supergirl's really popular. And let's just pretend like they're both on Tuesday nights on different channels. Like, CBS Supergirl might be like, you know what? We're going to start our show at 6:55 p.m. because, you know, that's like 5 minutes before Supernatural comes on. Like, they do weird shit like that. Like, week in and week out. Like, they fuck with the time. Sorry. They change, like, they constantly change. Like, you don't know what time Supernatural is going to be on next week or the week after that, because they're constantly battling each other, like, in weird ways. So you just have to understand, like, and, like, they'll do that. They'll, like, oh, we'll time this show to come out now, and then we'll hold back this one. So you just have to understand, England is just completely weird. And also, just like with Sherlock, like, in England, it's totally normal for a show to take a year off, take 2 years off, and then come back and blah, 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 three episodes in a season, 6 episodes, half hour. Remember Torchwood? It came out, they did a whole season in 1 week. Mm-hmm, it was like five episodes in a row, Monday through Friday. Who does that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a different culture. The whole different culture.
They don't.
Yeah, well, they don't go by the money system like we do with shows.
They don't know what they're doing.
They don't have to do it like that.
Whatever. No.
So, okay. Yeah, so to British people, it's like, yeah, because actually, in England, it's much more uncommon for a show to go 10 years and to do a season every single year. Like, that doesn't happen in England. So, you know, Doctor Who's already, like, a weird show already as it is in English terms. So there you go.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to list off all the other shows that we kind of didn't get around to. If you really want to talk about one, jump in there, but we're just going to kind of wrap it up a little with
because I got a jet again.
Oh my god, yeah, we're not going to wait a third time for you to come back. So we're going to get to a lot of them this year, but things that we it's on the burner, we're talking about, we haven't forgot about Agent Carter, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Did anybody watch Zoo?
What? No, that was you.
I did not
watch
it.
You're the only one watching
it. I have not watched it.
I never even heard of that.
Yeah.
It was where the animals got
They went crazy.
They went crazy and started killing people.
I know nothing of this. I don't think I want to know anything about it.
But people seem to love that, whatever. The 100, I hear a lot about that. And it's like...
Oh, my God. No, let's say that for another day. Like, that's too much drama. I mean, just to talk about it.
Okay.
I mean, to talk about it.
Okay, so I'm going to write that one down for Eric. Okay.
I've seen it all. Oh, kill me. Like, oh, why am I watching it?
Okay, well, never mind. I'm not going to watch that. Arrow, yes, we know.
You might like it. You might like it.
You be quiet.
You got a lot to catch up on. Though.
We got The Flash, iZombie.
Yes.
I refuse to watch the originals of Vampire Diaries anymore. Gotham, I'm caught up on. Wayward Primes, I thought. Stitchers, nobody knows about, right?
No idea.
No.
It's like
Stitchers?
It's going into dead people's dreams or going, I don't know what it is.
Oh, that ABC Family.
Yeah, that shit. I watched the first episode, and I was just like, I don't know.
It was another one of those, we got a woman who, what didn't she have, like, what did they try to make, say she had?
I don't know, dude.
They some type of thing where she didn't have, it's another character who's super smart, but she has this behavioral issue where she has no empathy. So it's like Asperger's. It's this thing where everybody, they want to give everybody Asperger's so they can act like an asshole to people, but they can't be punished for it. It's not their fault. Like, and now, so every show, like, it's so many shows that have done that. So that fell right into that quirk of, I don't know how it is to love somebody. I don't know how.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Total bullshit. So I just was. It felt like maybe it was going to be a little bit more sciency, but then it was not. And
it
so,
could have been. Yeah. I bet the writer of the pilot did not stay on to do the episodes afterwards.
Yeah. Good then sign. It might as well be Ghost Whisperer or something.
Mm-hmm.
What else we're going to talk about? But Bates Motel. We're going to keep up with that. Fear of the Walking Dead, Humans, Walking Dead. I think maybe Eric might do Star Wars Rebel at some point.
I got us back on that.
That's some good stuff.
I want to watch it. I want to watch all of these. There's From Dusk Till Dawn, the series that I watched, like the first few episodes.
I couldn't get into that one.
It was okay. I thought it was okay. American Horror Story, I thought it was great.
That lost me this season.
Yeah, The Strain, Game of Thrones. Let's see, we have Bitten, Dark Matter, Killjoys, 12 Monkeys that I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
Z Nation that I did not like.
It's keeping going. It's still going strong.
Yeah, I know, right? The Last Ship, The Librarians I wanted to watch.
I didn't watch The Librarians.
I tried to. I wanted to. I love the movies, The Librarians.
I didn't see that either. Mr. Robot,
we talked a little
Mr.
bit
Robot
about
Mr. Robot is excellent.
Yeah, that's good.
Stuff. Good
Black
stuff.
Mirror. Daredevil, Sensei, The Fall, Supergirl. We still got to talk about that. I have on here for some reason The Roots remake. I thought it was just ridiculous.
It's science fiction.
It's not science fiction, but I was just like, why would somebody remake
does that take place in the future?
I have no idea. It just was funny to me. So
and
there's going to be...
Is LeVar Burton in it?
I'll go up. Just stop talking. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay. So there's supposed to be the return of Twin Peaks in 2017.
Right.
There is supposed to be Westworld sometime this year.
I hope that'll be good.
The CW have something called Containment. Legends of Tomorrow, is that good?
I like that.
We talked about it a bit earlier, Kat, if you remember.
Maybe I stepped away for a second because I had like a video chat in the middle of the freaking podcast.
Kat, I would suggest checking it out, and I will say that at least so far, it seems to me like you really don't have to be caught up with Flash or Arrow. I mean, it would help a little bit, but I don't think it's necessary.
That's good.
They don't mention it in the entire two episodes because it's only the 2-hour pilot so far.
They don't mention it, but.
They don't mention those two characters.
Legends was a little bit set up, you know.
Right, it was.
But it's not important, though.
Right. They do that voiceover thing that Arrow does to kind of tell you exactly where we're at.
Oh.
Yeah.
You failed this city. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, the voiceover is basically, hey, we watched Doctor Who and we wanted to make an American thing and combine it with DC, so here you go.
Well, he is Rip Hunter is like
spoilers!
That.
Spoilers!
Or Doctor
Thank
Who.
You.
Well, it's part of the premise, not really.
Well, I don't know the premise. Now I do, and you're upsetting me. Sure. So I know I wanted to watch Ash versus the Evil Dead because Carl said that was really good.
I did enjoy that, and I'm not even a fan of Evil Dead. The Evil Dead.
I am.
This was so much fun. I can't wait to talk about it.
And I enjoyed it.
So The Magicians on Sci-Fi. Is anybody watching that?
I watched the little pilot thing, and I'm interested. I'm in a it's funny though because I would think Hanako would like that the most because it is such a take off of Harry Potter, but they're just grown, they're just, you know, the college age.
Oh, maybe she doesn't know about it.
See, I haven't seen the show. I've only seen like the little trailer or whatever. And see, and I want to check it out, but my only fear with it is like what we were talking about earlier about Siffy. I wasn't sure if this was like a throwback to the old guard, sci-fi shows that aren't really sci-fi shows.
Right.
That was my only hesitation.
Well, it's a magic show, so it's not sci-fi.
Well, this is heavy magic, and it's heavy magic. It is such a thing of this dude is like the there is something coming. There's a threat coming, and you have to stop it. And you're not prepared because you didn't know that you had these abilities, and now you have to learn. And you're now, and there's a college for magic users now.
Oh, that's
boy! I didn't know that.
Yeah,
and it's instead of magic being with the kids, magic is more like a sexy drug. It's like intoxicating.
I don't know.
The way magic
is. Also, this is season six, Buffy Dark Willow.
Kinda.
I'm about to turn into a pumpkin, unfortunately.
Okay, that's fine. One more show, and then we're gonna wrap this up. Okay. Preacher. Anybody looking forward to that?
I'm going to watch that. I am.
I don't know anything about that.
I didn't get into. Well, basically, the premise in the comic is God takes a break. He does not want to deal with anything, and this preacher, who kind of lost faith, he has been given the power of, I guess by God, somehow he's got the power of the voice, meaning that he could use his voice to make people do what he wants them to do. And he's on a search to find God because God is on earth somewhere doing his thing. And his friend, his best friend, is a vampire. And his girlfriend, best friend, who's a vampire, they're on a mission to find God. And then there's angels and stuff that don't want him to find, you know, God and all that kind of stuff.
So this is not Dominion, right?
Because not Dominion.
I don't know. I'm scared.
It probably will change some of it because for TV, I don't know what they're going to change when to adapt because you have to change some things. Because I could see the religious groups really going crazy.
Well, I heard it was a good. I have on good authority that this is a good story. So.
I want to bring up one real quick before I vanish.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if anyone's ever mentioned it, and I was like, why didn't anybody ever tell me about it sooner?
What?
But like, you know that show Outlander on Stars? You're familiar with it? Have you checked it out?
No, isn't it supposed to be time travel or something?
Well, here's the thing. I watched the first three or four episodes, and I really, really, really liked it. But this is only recently that I finally... Because I heard about it months ago, and then I only recently got to check it out, and I was like, why is no one else talking about it? I mean, SFPL people. I would describe it, it's almost like Sleepy Hollow in reverse. Instead of someone, you know, unexpectedly going into the future, it's someone unexpectedly going into the past.
Right.
You know, like a whatever in King Arthur's court. It's extremely, it's very cinematic looking. It looks really good.
Graphic sex, too.
What?
Very graphic sex.
Yeah, I guess.
That's not enough for sci-fi for me. That's not enough.
No. Okay, well, here's the little other unexpected thing that I watched the first episode and I was like, I really like this. And then I'm like, what? Produced by Ronald D. Moore?
Yep. Yeah, I heard that. I was
so shocked. That made it even better for me because I was like, oh, wow, because I like this. It is good. And then I was like, this is so good because it seemed like after he did BSG, like, it seemed like he kept trying to do other things that were sort of, like, sci-fi-like, but he just couldn't get something that stuck. And I like that he, I guess, went this angle, which is very different, but this has stuck for him.
It's popular, but it's a popular thing of books, too.
Well, it's just not enough for me.
It's more of a novella than anything.
It may not be enough for you. I don't know. But I just think it's a really good show. I would much rather watch other things than try that. That nobody else brought it up, or it's, you know, like between Hanukkah and
people
keep and
trying to get me to watch it, but I just don't want to. It's like, well, it's not enough.
You know, once I get a little bit further, I'm still only 3 or so episodes in. It is a
crazy, and it does a take on a lot of, it's graphic and violence as well. Like
I'm not in the mood.
Well, this is interesting because I haven't seen that much of what he's talking about yet. So
yeah, there's something that happens to a male character that is something that you would not see on TV.
Well, I've seen Spartacus, and there were some things on that show. I never thought I would see.
Maybe you had.
And that was also Stars. I don't know what their agenda is over there.
Oh, my God.
Well, thank you. I have to bow. Well, no,
we're going to end the show anyway. This has been like a really epic 4 hour long.
Well, I hope it's broken to an anthology or something.
Yeah, we're gonna have to break it up some sort of way, because no way this is gonna go up in one chunk, but that's fine. I really thank you guys for showing up, Hanako and Stephanie. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Daryl, for showing up. Loved having you on our 7th year. I hope we have 7 more years, maybe in one of those, maybe in the 7 years to come, Carl will get on GroupMe and talk with the rest of us. I don't know.
Whatever.
Because he's too good to speak with all of us. Yeah. Anyway, we love the feedback. We really are grateful that you called, even though, you know, we don't research on this show. We just kind of shoot off the hip, wing it, or whatever. So we really enjoy when folks call in and give us information. So thank you all for that. Continue to give us a call, 773-336-2686. We have a website where you can comment as well. We love reading those on the show also. Of course, you always know we're on Sci-Fi Party Line on Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus. You can also stream this from iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show in our 7th year, and we will see you at the party in the next 7 years. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. I used to research 7 years.